So, Nathaniel, it's gorgeous to have you here in the Pride Radio studios. And other than me making you cake and delicious cups of coffee all day, what are you doing at the Pride Media Centre?
I have to say, those cups of coffee were delicious.
Thank you very much.
So, thank you. Yeah. Well, I'm here today recording some content for the launch of the first ever national You Equals You campaign, which is taking place on the 20th of October in association with Eyes Open.
Now, I know you've said this a million times today, but for those listening, what is U equals U?
U equals U stands for undetectable equals untransmittable. And it's this amazing piece of science that has revolutionised the lives of people living with HIV like myself. So a few years ago, the research was showing that those people living with HIV who are on effective medication, whose viral load is undetectable, cannot transmit the virus onto their sexual partners. So you can imagine, for someone like me who's lived with HIV for 18 years, what a revolution that has been in terms of my sex life and in terms of my relationship with my partners, and the same across the world for other people with HIV. So it's an amazing piece of science. It's breaking down the stigma of the disease and it's revolutionising and changing people's lives.
Let's go back 18 years to the time that you found out that you had HIV. Tell me about that moment in your life.
Yeah, I was 16 when I found out I was HIV positive. What, 2 weeks before my 17th birthday, but still 16, just a child, really. I went into a relationship with someone who was older than me when I was 16. It was my act of rebellion. I was just coming out. You know, I was a straight A student from a very safe middle class background. And, you know, we go back to 2003. The world was a much more homophobic place, but the UK was for sure. And so the idea of me sort of dating someone my own age, it was sort of a rite of passage to go out with someone older. And I think lots of other people my age will, or from that era, will say the same. So, you know, I met this guy and we hit it off and we had a summer fling. And as a result, I contracted HIV from that fling. And it was devastating. It was at that moment when I was just coming into myself, you know, understanding my sexuality and kind of breaking through all that, those years of shame and internalized homophobia that you build growing up as a gay person. I got this thing that was kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, it was like, well, if you're gay, you are going to get that thing and you deserve it. And there was another layer of stigma and shame added. And it shut me down. And I didn't talk about it for a very long time. For 15 years, in fact, I didn't tell anyone about my HIV status.
And it's interesting now because we've got lots of younger listeners and they understand that there's great services out there and there's PrEP and there's PEP and there's all these wonderful things. But back in 2003, did you have that kind of same support or were you very much left on your own?
I mean, I went to the GUM clinic, the old sort of services at the hospital, and it was quite terrifying, really, and alienating to go into that environment, having to go up to a hospital after college, you know, every 2 weeks. And the staff were really lovely and very, very supportive. And I was signposted to a local charity and then I had a little bit of counselling in the college that I was at. But other than that, I did just kind of get on with it. And I just went, oh, this thing's happened. It's not a big deal. I was very British about it. I minimised it and I just got on with my life. And to a certain degree, I continued, you know, I still was living as an out and proud gay man, and I volunteered for charity, you know, LGBT charities, and I traveled the world like I wanted. I did everything I wanted to do, and I was living this life. But behind closed doors, the psychological impact of it over time was chipping away at me, and it was affecting my sense of self-worth. I started to develop generalized anxiety disorder, that developed into post-traumatic stress disorder, and that was impacting my relationships with my partners, with friends, with family, and eventually towards the sort of end of that, in sort of 2016, 2017, I was then starting to lean quite heavily on alcohol and drugs as a way to kind of cope with all that as well.
And when did you decide to own it and to be out about it? Because obviously we know about It's a Sin, we'll talk about that, but you were doing one-man shows, you were writing plays, you were out there, and what was that moment that you thought, actually, you know, I'm not going to let this govern my life, I'm going to celebrate the fact and talk about it?
Yeah, I mean, I remember quite vividly, I caught myself in a mirror wearing a dressing gown, looking like the living dead, still awake 2 days after a house party. And my then partner had even gone out to work and I was still up and awake. And I just thought, I don't recognise that person anymore. That's not where I thought my life was going. And it was in that moment that I made a commitment to say, I'm going to have to address this thing that I have kind of buried for so long. And I'm a theatre maker, and I make a lot of theatre from real life stories. And I'm often telling people, or like encouraging people, and going, tell your story, tell your truth, be brave, you know, get up on stage and do it. And I was like, you're going to have to take your own medicine here. And I tried for many years to tell my family, and it never came out. It always got stuck. So making my solo show, which is called First Time, was kind of the catalyst. It forced my hand, because once the ball was rolling on that, I had to then tell my family. I had to kind of come out and be public about this and be brave. And that first step is obviously the hardest. And then each time it just gets easier and easier and easier, you know. And now I feel like my life is unrecognisable to what it was back then.
And who were the audiences that were turning it up? Was it, you know, older gay men who had gone through it and learned, or was it a younger, because obviously you were attracting a youth audience?
We get all sorts through the door for First Time. It's really important for me as well, as the show is, you know, about some really important issues. You know, it tackles illness and death and dying and the early part of the AIDS and HIV epidemic. It covers alcohol and drug misuse. It's got all these things in it. But actually, it's really funny. And that's really important to me. You know, actually, it has to be entertaining. It's a piece of theatre. You're not going to a lecture. You go into a piece of theatre. So we get a real mixed audience. I do often get people, older people coming to me afterwards who lived through the epidemic and saying, you know, how amazing, how far things have come. And we do have a moment in the show where we reflect and remember that part and the things that people went through and the fight and the struggle for effective medication and the campaigning. So, you know, people come and say thank you for that. And then we get younger people who are like, you know, their eyes are open to a whole thing that they didn't know about, and fantastic that they can have that education in inverted commas without having to come through school, because let's face it, sex education in school it's like Coach Carr in Mean Girls, you know what I mean? You will get chlamydia and die, and it's still like that, unfortunately, in many schools. So a great way for young people also to kind of have a frank discussion about sexual health.
And also, not just through the work that you do, but then TV comes along and it's a sin, and it's groundbreaking, a brilliant piece of television in its own right, but covering a time that some people have forgotten about, some people have deliberately tried to put in the back of their brain and not go back there. What was the reaction that you've had from it?
When I got the role, I was obviously
over
the moon.
TV love.
Well, I just found out, I was in Edinburgh doing my show. We took my show to the Edinburgh Fringe. And I just found out, I'd come out of a show, and my director had come up to me and said, you've just got 5 stars in the stage. And I was like, oh my word, let's get a drink, celebrate. And then I got a phone call from my agent going, that self-tape you sent in for that show, you've just got it. So I was on cloud nine. So, I mean, apart from that, and a real honour to be part of the cast and be able to tell that story. But when we got the script and read it, I was like, this is so good. Like, you know, it's Russell T Davies. And I knew it was going to make waves in the LGBTQ community. Like, it always is, because he tells our stories so beautifully. We had no idea it would have the impact that it had more broadly, and that universal appeal to a wider audience. And I think that shows that there's been a shift as well. I think particularly if you go back to when Queer as Folk was on to now, Queer as Folk was quite cult, and it was a cult hit, and it was popular within the LGBT community, but more widely it wasn't as accepted. Whereas It's a Sin, you know, people were talking about it. I was like, 6 or 7 weeks afterwards, I turned on the radio and they were still talking about it, you know. So to have that impact is amazing. And then for the conversations that have come out of that in terms of the charities and the organisations that have had chance to educate and tell people that HIV has changed, it's not like that anymore, has been incredible.
And it evoked memories, because I watched it. I'm old enough to remember when HIV/AIDS first came out. And I completely forgot. I dated a guy and sadly he passed away. I completely forgot about going to the hospital and having that door shut on you and having to wear this whole robe to go in and see him, because I still remembered Happy Colin in my head. But it was a real re-education for me that you sit there and you hear of so much positivity that's happened. But to get to this point, we had to go through the dark times.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I got a real sense of that on the first airing date of It's a Sin, and I know lots of people binge watched it straight away on All Four. I mean, I think that was a great thing for Channel 4 to do, put it straight on All Four so everyone can watch it, because everyone was stuck in lockdown going, I need something to watch. But I got, I mean, I was inundated with messages, and I know everyone else in the cast and Russell was, particularly from people who'd lived through it, or potentially like yourself had lost, have lost people through this epidemic, and just saying how validating it was to see that experience, because actually, you know, HIV, as we've seen, It's a Sin, HIV wasn't treated like coronavirus is treated today. You know, it was distrust, mistrust, fear, even hatred, homophobia. You know, so to think that you are supporting a loved one who is ill and sick and dying, and then to have that as well alongside it is incredibly painful. So to have it on a national, you know, on a mainstream channel, and to have that story honoured and validated, I think has been really important for many, many people.
Was it a difficult role for you? Because what happened to the Ollie Alexander character happened to you, but the character was switched. In yours, you were the character that passed on the HIV. Mm. That happened to you from somebody else. Was that a hard thing to compute, or did you just not relate to that?
No, do you know what? I sometimes say to people, I feel like a bit of a fraud, because people ask me that. It's like, was it really emotional to go through? And I'm like, no, I just turned up and said the lines.
I'm an actor, love. You know, I'll go where the dollar is. I'm perfectly fine.
But no, I think maybe there was part of me and my psyche that did that on purpose to protect myself. You know, it is very close to me. And Russell and the team and the producers were, you know, tuned into that and did say to me, and we had lots of conversation going, checking in that I was okay and making sure that, you know, it wasn't impacting me in a negative way. But I think, you know, for me, you know, people often ask me, what do I feel about the person that gave it to me? And I'm like, I'm indifferent. If he wants to come and have a chat, we can have a chat, we'll go for a coffee. Like, me being upset or angry about that thing that happened is not going to change it. Like, and there's no blame and there's no shame in transmitting HIV to someone. You know, most people don't know they've got HIV when they transmit it, so, you know, it's not done maliciously, so it didn't really have that negative impact on me. It was more watching it back and watching the whole series back, and particularly the story of Colin Morris Jones in it, played so amazingly by Callum Howells. That he contracted it from his first time, and I obviously contracted it from my first time, and I think, gosh, if I had been born, you know, not that much, you know, maybe 10, 15 years earlier, my story could be very different. So it was one of those moments that hit me and went, gosh, I'm one of the lucky ones here. I survived this. So
if we could go back 18 years, what would you say to 16-year-old Nathaniel now?
Cut your hair. Oh my God, I had the most awful hair. And now I tell my story, and like, I go around and got this picture of me in my cream tuxedo before my prom. And I'm like, what is that hair? Like, at least I could have had the foresight to have a good haircut. So when I'm showing this picture about my trauma in the future, I can go, look, I have great hair. But 2003 was wild in terms of hairstyles. So, I mean, mine used to be like Gareth Gates and Popeye.
Oh, lovely.
So the Gareth Gates. I mean, you know,
like the ham and pineapple, you know, fancy. You
yeah,
know?
clearly the gay in me was screaming to come out at school, you know, and I was trying to show it in any way I could. If I was being serious, I'd say, you know, like, I'd just say it's going to be all right. Like, I think there's a lot. If I think about the pain and the sadness that I have been through, you know, now I talk comfortably and openly and we have a joke about it, but there was 15 years of a lot of pain and sadness, but you know, with the right support I got through it. And I think that's what I'd say to anyone who's younger. You know, life is hard, like HIV or not HIV, we all go through trauma, we all go through pain and sadness, but you are strong and resilient and you'll get through it.
So other than get a good haircut, what would you say to a 16-year-old now, or a 60-year-old who doesn't know their status and nervous about going ahead and finding out?
The kids today seem to have amazing haircuts. Like, it doesn't seem to be a thing. I was out.
Oh, you had an amazing haircut in 2003,
well, exactly,
love.
Yeah.
And now we'll go, oh, yeah. Nay.
Maybe that. It's just time, isn't it?
Go bald. Yeah. Wear a hat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would say, you know, if you're worried about getting a test, or you've just been tested and you've just had a positive result, it can be very isolating and you can feel like you're the only person going through that, but you're not. There's many, many people living happy, healthy lives with HIV. Life is more complicated, You know, it's, I'm going to say that you don't want to go out shopping for HIV. Don't get lax about it. Make sure you're getting tested regularly using the protection that's right for you. But if you do get that positive diagnosis, that's the best place to be in, because you're going to get the healthcare you need. You're going to get the support you need. And you know, if you're on medication, you're not going to pass it on to someone else and have to live with that. So it's really important. So get good people around you and get the support. Yeah. And don't be afraid to seek out other people with HIV, because I didn't do that for about 10 or 11 years. I lived without even meeting another HIV positive person, and having that conversation and all of a sudden understanding that you're not alone is very powerful.
Nathaniel, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.